Good morning, everybody. It's Jeff Goldberg for the Sales Pro Network. If you haven't joined us before, I'm a sales coach and trainer. I work with both individuals and organizations internationally to help them do one thing and one thing only, get measurable and sustainable sales increases. And I founded the Sales Pro Network a little over 3 years ago to elevate the profession of sales and to give you a place you can come to chat with other salespeople, network with other salespeople, get advice and coaching so you can increase your income, serve more people, and be a happier camper. Today is Friday, April 19th, and as always, at 10 a.m. on Fridays, we either do a live training or a live interview with somebody who can add value to the profession of sales. And once again, my friends, I've come through big time for you. Before I introduce you to our guest, I just wanted to share something very quickly. I often talk about how you can't wait till the end of the year to figure out you're not going to make it. You need to get some help early. But today I want to share something a little bit different because right now I'm speaking to a lot of people who are telling me things like, oh, Jeff, summer's coming and you can't sell during the summer, or the economy is terrible, or inflation is high. So in my auto signature on my email, there's a quote, and it's my own quote. It's from me. And it says this: salespeople either have excuses or closed business. Which one do you choose? So the economy's rough? Guess what? Get tough, my friend. Inflation's high? Go do it anyways. If there's somebody in your field who's actually being successful, that means you can too. So you either have excuses or you're going to close business. And my thing is this: you can have the best excuses in the world, but if you don't close enough business at the end of the month, when they repossess your house, the bank doesn't want to hear the economy was bad or inflation was high. So you got to do what you got to do. If you need to get some help, speak to somebody like today's guest. Go on YouTube. There are free videos explaining how to sell, how to prospect, how to do everything you need to do. Did I mention free? There's no excuse for not investing in yourself, whether it's actually financially or just putting in the time to increase your skills, to learn how, what you need to do, what you need to do. And you know, as a sales coach, I'm often my client's biggest cheerleader and your biggest cheerleader. But sometimes we all need someone who's going to give you the tough news. And sometimes I have to be that kind of coach, and I don't mind it because my job is not to be a nice guy. My job is to help you make more money. So if you've got excuses instead of closed business, take a look at what are you doing despite the fact that inflation is high, despite the fact that you might think the economy is not great. By the way, I don't think that. My business is booming, and I think the economy is great. So stop listening to the noise. Don't worry about that we've got a former president who's on a criminal trial. Don't worry about the fact that there are wars going on. Just focus on what can I personally do to bring in more closed business so I can support my family, myself, and my company. And with that, I'm going to introduce you to today's guest. He is a revenue enablement strategist, a certified gap selling partner, and he is the founder of Revenue Flywheel Group. Please welcome Paul Butterfield. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Jeff. Can we keep talking about your stream that you started with? Because I feel so strongly about that.
Absolutely.
Sales is hard. If it wasn't as difficult as it is, everybody would be doing it because it is such a great profession, but it's not easy. Absolutely agree with you. Thanks for saying that.
It's my pleasure. And I love what you just said. And I've said this before on this podcast. My stepfather was a career salesperson. He taught me many things about sales very early on in my career. But one of the things he said to me is exactly what you just said: sales is a great career. And then he finished it with this: and here's why. Every day you get to wake up, look yourself in the mirror, and give yourself a raise. And then all you have to do is go out and earn it. It ain't going to fall into your lap by mistake. It ain't going to fall into your lap without accident. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at myself because every time my kids say on accident, I'm like, it's by accident. But my point is, go out and make it happen. That's my catchphrase for sales. Make it happen. Make sales happen. So good morning to everybody who's joining us. If you have any questions for our guests, please do put them in the comments. And Paul, could we maybe start with the 2 to 3 minute version of your background? What brought you up to now?
Sure. The short version is, Jeff, I'm a sales guy at heart. Grew up in sales, got started in tech sales with HP a while back. And so for about 25 years, either was selling, then leading sales teams progressively with different companies like, you know, in fact, HP, Microsoft, Intuit. And about 12 years ago, was leading a sales crew at a contact center as a service company. And my EVP was brand new. We switched leaders partway through my time there. And he asked me in my one-on-one one Friday morning if I'd ever heard of this thing called sales enablement. This was September 2012. I walked in there ready to talk about how I'm going to close out my Q3. we talked about that, but he wanted to talk about this thing, sales enablement, and he'd researched it. And so long story short, he loved how I was developing my AEs, because as a leader, I feel it's our moral obligation to develop our people and help them become the best they can. But frankly, as a sales leader, I had a number to hit, and our company wasn't doing any sort of professional development for any of the employees. So I was filling that gap. So what Bill observed was that, and he asked me to go home for the weekend and think about how could I take what I was doing for my crew and scale that for his entire organization, and come back Monday with my answer. So 12 years later, I have founded enablement and built out teams and strategies at three or four companies. And so that's what I'm doing now, is combining all those years in sales and sales leadership and execution on the front line with what I've learned building out global enablement at some sizable companies like Vonage, and then helping the companies I work with now to break down those internal silos, to think about or understand how their go-to-market teams or lack of working together, the go-to-market teams are impacting customer success. And conversely, when they are all working together in sync, seemingly little things even will create an elevated customer experience. I've seen this happen in the field. This isn't theory for me. And it actually will become a differentiator. You're talking about the economy, and you're right, we can't control that. But what we can control is how our customers are treated, the lack of friction in buying from us, and some other things I think we're going to get into. So
yeah, let's make it easy for people to do business with us. I'm constantly stunned by a number of stupid things in this world of sales. Yeah. But you know, making it difficult for people to reach you, making it difficult for prospects to actually agree to do business with you or to onboard them, it's just ridiculous. And you said something else I can't resist commenting on. And I don't want to make this whole thing a rant today. I'm in a great mood. But I'm constantly stunned by companies that complain about a lack of sales and don't invest in their salespeople. I mean, it's self-serving from a guy like me or a guy like you to say, I judge companies on, do they invest in their people? Do they hire guys like, and it doesn't have to be the two of us. There's a million guys and gals who do what we do. They don't have them read books. They don't have them go to seminars. They don't bring in experts. If you're not going to support your salespeople, you're hopelessly anticipating mediocrity. And I don't know that everybody can be a sales superstar, but you can certainly be good. It doesn't take a genius to be good at sales. There's some very basic fundamental things you need to do. And it's not it's not rocket science. You just need to know the fundamentals, but companies that don't invest in their people are just missing the boat. So let's talk about enablement, because you're very big on that. You do. I was on your website, revenue enablement, customer journey enablement, sales enablement. And I actually went to the dictionary, and the dictionary defines enablement as the action of giving someone the authority or means to do something. So how do you define enablement, and what's the difference between revenue, sales, and customer journey enablement?
Well, I'll start with the labels. So sales, revenue, customer journey. That's not so much what's different, is what do they encompass? And so sales enablement was the term that came along. I think Forrester may have coined it first, if you go way back. Here's what I learned. Remember, I came into enablement as a sales director, right off the front lines, right? There wasn't anything out there about enablement. There's no books on it yet. You couldn't go get a playbook. So I had to figure it out. And in some ways, I've always been grateful for that, because here my boss created this new position. He told the rest of the sales organization, all right, now you've got somebody that's going to go do this. He's still he's still a VP level in my organization, but you need to listen to him, right? So that's the executive support that you always want. But I got to sit down with those VPs and directors that I'd been working alongside for some time at that point, and say, what do we think this sales enablement thing is? And I remember that whiteboarding session in my office. Remember offices? Clearly, where we talked about, look, we get to do this, right? We don't get to bitch anymore. We now have resources. What do we think this should be? And yeah, made mistakes for sure. But a couple of things that I knew intuitively from having led a sales crew at that company was give you a couple of examples. One, the number of deals that either didn't turn up or turned up late because of a, frankly, poor handoff to professional services and customer success, or renewals that didn't happen because of that, right? It just took a little longer, but the same result. I was trying to get my sellers to stop talking about features, no feature dumps, and talk about business challenges and outcomes and use cases. Yet the folks that were providing a lot of the materials for customers and my team were talking about features. And so I mentioned just a couple of those because what I realized once I got the core sales enablement built that my boss, Bill is this guy, Bill Robinson, great guy. In fact, he's CRO of GoTo now. So he's still out there making it happen. Then I went to our COO and made the case for why I felt the CS team needed to be coming through some of the sales onboarding, needed to be coming through our methodology workshops and where the benefits would be. Fortunately, he saw that. And so again, it was something that I just from practical experience understood. I didn't call it revenue enablement at the time. I just didn't occur to me. And I think that probably came along 3-4 years later when I realized that what I'm doing is we're now, when I was at Vonage, for example, we built out enablement there and other departments, marketing, CS, et cetera, started asking, can we send our people to your onboarding, et cetera. So it was really an evolutionary thing for me. So the last one, when I talk about customer journey enablement, it's all of those things. And here's why I came up with that term. I may not have come up with it originally, but I'm the first one I thought. I thought about it. Because when I talk to executives, especially outside of the enablement profession, it's frankly still confusing for them, even today. But they do understand customer journey, buyer journey. When I talk to them about what does holistic enablement look like, and the fact that it can't just be sales, it can't just be any one or two teams, that's a term I coined that people get it. They understand that. And the good news is when I launched the company full time about a year ago, I had my attorney check and nobody trademarked it. So we did. I'm writing a book about it right now. So
outstanding. I look forward to that. And please keep me informed when that comes out. I certainly want to get that. Now, besides enablement, you're an expert on several different types of selling, including gap selling, which I believe is Keenan's methodology, yes. Customer-centric selling, and triangle selling, which I had never heard of before. What are the commonalities between these three types of selling, and what are maybe the pluses and minuses?
And triangle selling, you maybe know the authors. You probably come across Corey Bray or Hillman Sori. They've been out there working for written quite a few books on enablement and sales and all that. The good news is I haven't found at least that there is one true sales methodology that I've been able to achieve. And some of these methodologies I used as a sales leader first, like customer-centric selling. I learned that as a Microsoft sales leader. It took a bunch of us up there to Seattle at the W downtown, and we went through the whole 3.5-day workshop and then reused that with our team. I used that at Intuit, et cetera. Some of them I have used more in my enablement space I'm doing now, such as triangle or gap. So I've seen the results across multiple. Here's the thing, that a couple of pieces of advice that I give people on this. Number one, make sure it's a real methodology. And I don't want to call out any particular ones here, but there are some very often spoken of frameworks, philosophies, approaches to sales. They're very popular, very, you know, best-selling book in one case. It is not a methodology. So be careful of that. Make sure you don't just have a qualifying framework. You don't just have an approach that's not prescriptive enough for salespeople to follow. What you do want is all three of those methodologies, and I'm sure there are others, that is something that is teaching the salespeople business acumen, that is having them leverage that. And that's not on the salespeople to develop, by the way. That's on enablement. That's on product. That's on product marketing. That's where that knowledge lives, and we need to get that in the hands of the salespeople. They need that business acumen to go in and have intelligent conversations with the prospects, the ICPs we're talking to over and over again, that they are able to internalize it. We don't want scripting. Nobody wants to hear a scripted salesperson. And so all three methodologies teach them how to think for themselves, not what to think. That's a big difference, and help them have those kinds of conversations. Another commonality in a great methodology is in discovery. I think we might get into some of this a little bit later, but I'll for now say in discovery, you've got a couple of things you've got to achieve. Talking about your product, talking about the latest logos, latest round of funding. No. In that stage of the relationship, that prospect is trying to figure out, are you a serious individual? Are you worth spending any time with? And frankly, can you help them do something that they didn't already figure out for themselves? Otherwise, why are they talking to you? And you don't do that by showing them a bunch of PowerPoint slides. How you do that is by coming in prepared and asking thoughtful questions, understanding what's going on in their business, and guiding them through a process of starting to create a vision for themselves about how they can get to that future state that you're helping them describe. Some people are better at it than others. Sometimes it's a lot of work to get them to help articulate it for themselves. But if they don't leave that first discovery meeting with at least the beginnings of that vision, you haven't succeeded. I'm not saying they'll never talk to you again, but you have not done true discovery. Another common thing to look for is discovery is not a one and done. I'm still shocked at the number of organizations I talk to that look at that as a, okay, we did discovery, now let's move on. No. I mean, depending on whose research you listen to, we're up to what now? Average of 7 decision makers in a deal. CFOs are reaching down into contract sizes that in the past they would have never bothered with. And if you're not uncovering and earning the right to talk to those key players and doing discovery with them, you're missing out. Best case, you're probably leaving money on the table because you have not made the big enough business case. You haven't identified all of the problems going on there that you can help with. Worst case, you don't get the deal because somebody scuttles it and you never know what happened because you didn't meet them and you didn't ever know who they were. Those are a couple of commonalities that I want to get at. But the big takeaway there is building out that case with the client. You know, when it's done right, closing techniques that a lot of us grew up on aren't the thing they used to be. When you've built the case with your prospect, we're not telling them what they need to do. It becomes more of a natural decision-making process for them. So that's another commonality that I look for.
Yeah, I love so much of what you just said. First of all, PowerPoint. I don't use PowerPoint at all when I'm selling, not at all. I'm sitting down with a VP of sales or a president or a CEO, it's just me and them having a discussion. I sometimes will use a legal pad and draw some things out. But PowerPoint, I think it makes you look too canned. People want to have a real discussion. You said it beautifully. They're not looking for your pitch deck. They want to have a discussion with you about what their challenges are, what you can do for them. So brilliant. I also completely agree with what you said about closing. One of my favorite phrases is that closing is the natural outcome of the sales process done right.
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
I say that because I'm guessing, like me, you probably get calls like this. Hey, Paul, can you come teach my people how to close? I get that pretty right. I can't resist that. This is only 30 seconds, but I got a call. It must be 8 or 10 years ago now. A guy was a VP of sales at a company that sells advertising, had a team across 5 states in the Midwest, called me up, got my name from the cable advertising bureau, got a good referral to me. And he said, Jeff, I'm getting my people to get together for 3 days in Indiana. Could you come out on the third day and spend the day with them, teaching them how to close? And my answer was, I'd be glad to come out and spend the day with your people. I'm just curious, what are we going to do with the other 7 hours and 55 minutes of the day? Because closing just means you're asking a question, the answer to which is, yes, I want to do business with you, or no, I don't. It's everything that comes before that that really affects the close. And the last point I have to make is, I truly believe that all of us are saying the same thing. Every sales trainer, every sales expert, we're just using different words. Every methodology is pretty much the same. Make friends with people, find out what's going on for them. If you can actually solve their issue or help them in some way, let them know how you're going to do that. And then ask them for their business. I often like to say my oldest daughter, whose birthday is tomorrow, is a rocket scientist. Like literally, she's an aerospace engineer. You don't have to be an aerospace engineer. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to be good in sales. But you do have to know some things, and you have to be able to communicate with people. So I just love everything that you just said. One of the things that you do is you help sales organizations develop customer-centric organizations that differentiate how they go to market. And I often find this is a big challenge. I think everybody would agree it's important to be able to differentiate, especially in what's possibly a commoditized industry. And I've worked with many of those. How does an organization go about figuring out what makes them different, especially in a commodity sale?
Often companies are sitting on data that can be mined and used for the salespeople's benefit. I'll give you a couple of examples. If it's a true commodity, if you're selling, I'm going back to my university days, right? If you're selling low interest credit cards, you can still do actually effective discovery. You can still set yourself apart. But when you are looking at almost any kind of sale, understanding who's typically buying, understanding what are the problems that they are solving with it, and being able to go in and articulate that or help draw it out of them during the conversation, in my experience, it doesn't matter what you sell. A good friend of mine, Rachel, was the head of enablement and training for Konica. right? I don't think copiers, that's a commodity sale if I've ever heard of one. But she shared some of the things where she, you know, some of the concepts that you and I are talking about that she also has used to help the folks that are selling those copiers differentiate. So instead of going in and talking about a copier and features, they went in and talked about what happens when the copier breaks, what happens when you run out of supplies. They started taking a holistic view. So it's going to be different for every scenario, but it's that key to understanding why the customer is even doing business with you or why your other customers are, and bringing that in. It's not complicated, and companies usually know this, but they don't get it in the hands of the sellers for whatever reason.
You know, Sorry.
I was going to say, I would love to do a survey sometime. Maybe I will next January, of the percentage of SKOs where new pitch decks roll out. I bet you it's well over half. Even though, you know, you and I are talking about this, I know plenty of other people feel the same way. I'll bet at least half of the SKOs every year a new pitch deck gets introduced because companies are just still stuck in that mode.
Yep. As I speak to people like you for this podcast, I'm making notes while people are talking to make sure I say something or ask the right question. But you just said it. Ask your clients, ask your customers why they do business with you. Ask that your customers what they like about doing business with you. Ask your customers what makes you different. They'll tell you. Yeah. And I think they're the best source of business intelligence. And I found personally, I'm often incredibly surprised by the answers. The reason I think they're doing business with me is often not even close. I'm pretty experienced. I'm pretty good at this. I should know why people do business. I'll give you a quick example, and I've used it here before. For those of you who are listening for not the first time, please try to stay awake. But I worked with a company for a year and a half to help them break into the enterprise market. They were an SMB. They sold them load balancers, which is computer hardware.
Oh. Okay.
Cool technology, which I didn't understand before I started working with them, but they had been selling to the SMB market for 16 years. They were looking for help to break into the enterprise market. I did a bunch of things over a year and a half, and we broke them into the enterprise market. At the end of the engagement, I sat down with the entire sales management team. I think there were 9 different people, plus the VP. And I asked them, what'd you like? What was the best thing you got out of this? And Paul, to a person, they all said the same thing. Oh, the thing we like best about working with you, our salespeople now have more confidence. Mm-hmm. Now, it never once occurred to me in all the time I've been doing this, one of the things I give salespeople is confidence. But you can bet now every time I meet with somebody new, I'm letting them know, well, one of the things my customers tell me they like about working with me is that when I'm done, their salespeople are more confident. They sound more confident. They feel more confident. And that confidence comes through when they're having discussions with their prospects. Just ask your clients. They will tell you.
Don't be shy. Yeah, you should want to know this. And the biggest, and how are they solving problems? Because if you don't understand what problems they're solving with your, then how do you continually improve your product? But, right, what you're typically is become product driven, and you start thinking, what's the next cool feature we could roll out, or what? Oh, how do we tag AI on? That's going on a lot of boardrooms right now. How do we tag AI in? Right, whether or not it actually has a place. And I love what you said about the confidence. Too often in sales, we see ourselves as somehow inferior. We feel like people are doing us this massive favor to even talk to us because we're, you know, these others, unwashed, right? The fact is, if you are a salesperson that has really honed your craft, and by that I mean you don't practice, right? You don't practice these conversations on unsuspecting prospects. You've learned them, you've worked with them, you understand your ICP, you understand the problems they're solving, you understand the outcomes that they're achieving. You're going to bring value to that conversation. It may not be the right fit for everybody. Sometimes bad news early is good news for everybody. But you are bringing value. And if you're not feeling that and you come across like this, that sets the tone for the entire sales cycle. And that will come back to bite you when you're trying to ask for the business and negotiate a price. So own it. I love that you're doing that.
Absolutely, Paul. And you may have seen me smiling and writing down another note. It's because salespeople consistently lower themselves in the eyes of their prospect. And I constantly remind people, please do not start a sales conversation with, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're busy. I'm going to get right to the point. Why are we bowing down to the almighty? You know what? I'm busy too. My attitude is this. You should be so grateful that I'm here talking to you because I'm a very busy person and I get paid well for what I do. I'm willing to invest some of my, I don't say those words, but my attitude is they are fortunate. But when you say thanks for your time, you're saying, well, your time is very valuable. I guess mine isn't. If you're going to say anything, I'd rather start out with, I'm really glad we could invest some time together today. Mm-hmm. I want to be on an even keel. Plus, I do believe that word choices are crucial. And when you say we could invest some time together, hopefully psychologically people are going, oh, investments often have a return. This is good. I'm glad we're going to have this conversation.
Yeah. Don't be a waiter. Right. No. Nothing wrong with the profession of a waiter, but salespeople are not waiters. Right. When you walk into a restaurant or a bar, you sit down, you tell them what you want, and they bring it to you. And if that's what you're doing, you're not selling, you're taking orders. And in this economy, you're probably not taking many of them. So go in there to have a conversation and bring some value.
Yep, absolutely. And by the way, I have no problem with people taking orders as long as they make enough money and serve enough people to support their goals. That's fine by me. I just haven't found a way to do that consistently.
No, I haven't found that either. Let me know if you do. I'll go into business with you. So,
Paul, I don't know your age, but you may be somewhere close to me. And I often talk about how I'm the Ralph Cramden of salespeople. You remember the show, The Honeymooners?
Yes. I mean, I remember the reruns. I don't remember the show.
Right. So I'm a drop older then. But, you know, Ralph Cramden was this Brooklyn bus driver, lived in a tenement. He was always going to make $1 million. I'm going to make $1 million, Alice. That's his wife. Well, I'm the Ralph Cramden of salespeople. For 48 years, I've been looking for a way to make a lot of money in sales with the least amount of effort possible. Just haven't found a way. I found a way to make a lot of money in sales, but not without a heck of a lot of effort. And I'm fine with that. Everything in life, there's a price to pay. You want to be successful? Learn how to do it. Take the activity, do the activities that will make you successful. That's why a coach like yourself is so important. Sometimes we know what we need to do and we're just not doing it. And that's why I said in the beginning, you know, sometimes I'm your biggest cheerleader and sometimes I'm going to give you the kick in the ass that you need.
Yeah.
Because we all need that. One of the other things that you're an expert at is evaluating an organization's tech stack. Are there any particular tools that you're currently recommending that can be used by any organization, or is it really company specific? And by the way, what's your tech stack?
Yeah. So my tech stack's pretty simple right now because I'm out doing this. I don't have a sales team. It's me. And so my tech stack I use ChatGPT. For some things, I find ChatGPT to be a great idea generator. I'm experimenting with Claude now because a friend of mine who actually is an expert in AI told me that he has found that Claude actually captures individual voices better. I use that. I have a CRM. But my tech stack, I mean, the tech stack, when I'm talking with clients, there are a couple of things that I think consistently everybody should have. One is conversational intelligence. To me, conversational intelligence solves a couple of age-old problems in sales. But number one, as a sales leader, you can only be and should only be on so many calls, or if they're field reps, ride-alongs. You're only ever going to be able to see and evaluate a slice of what's going on. And I guarantee as somebody who did lots of ride-alongs and someone who went out on lots of ride-alongs, those are going to be cherry-picked appointments. Those are going to be really prime appointments. But with CI, with conversational intelligence, you now can understand and analyze at scale. What are the conversations that your team is having with prospects? How is that being received? Most importantly, what is the sentiment? I mean, there's so much. Are they using filler words? You know, a lot, like, you know, it's one of mine that I try to avoid. There are so many reasons to be doing that. And one of the other ones that reason I talk about with folks is that customer experience. I don't know of a better way to, at scale, again, see, are we delivering the experience that we have trained and enabled these people, these reps, to do? It also helps with the coaching problem. Even the best sales leader in the world with the best intentions for coaching has very limited amount of time to do it. Look at all that we put on sales leaders to do. And then we say, oh, and go coach and develop everybody. So conversational intelligence from the enablement side, although it's not just benefiting enablement, there are platforms that are out there. There's a few really good ones that I recommend that'll do a couple of things for you. Number one, that you are able to measure enablement activities and correlate them back to real-time data and results in your CRM. That is so critical. Going back to my background, I came, you know, coming out of sales like I did, I had sat through more than my fair share of shit trainings. And so I was determined that I was never going to waste. And I would tell sales, I still tell salespeople that if I ever, or my team ever asks you to step away from selling to do anything, and you don't feel like it helped you become better at your job when you went back, flag it. Let me know, because nobody has time for that. And But if we can't measure that, when I got into enablement 12 years ago, we found ways to measure it, but it was very difficult and it was all lagging indicators. Now with technology, there's no excuse to not be correlating activities and enablement functions back to revenue. Ultimately is what we need to be driving. But what are the leading and lagging indicators that we know are going to get us to that revenue? So those are a couple of pieces of tech that I don't really see how anybody can get by with anymore.
Yep. Once again, I'm consistently stunned by companies. I was just brought into a new client and I asked, you know, what CRM are you using? Oh, well, we're using Zoho. I'm like, great. I like Zoho. That's a good one. Yeah. And the CEO said, well, actually, only our marketing person is using it. My salespeople aren't. Yeah, exactly. The look on your face right now. For those of you who are listening to this later on as a podcast, Paul just had that look of, what? Are you kidding me? Yeah. So I'm working on getting that happening.
So salespeople are using notebooks on their desk or something?
You're prescient, Paul, because I sat in on their sales meeting on Wednesday, and everybody, you know, the VP of sales, he's actually the sales manager, was going around the room, tell me what's going on for you. And they all pulled out a notebook and looked at their notebook and they're reading notes. And I'm actually on Zoom because they're located in a different state. And I'm going, oh my God, oh my God, they're using notebooks. Now look, I take handwritten notes too, because I'm an old guy and I transfer them to a computer. But here's the danger. Let's set aside the danger for the salesperson themselves by not having the right information at their fingertips. As an organization, if your people aren't using CRM, you are in grave danger. First of all, what if they quit? They just took all that information with them and you've lost every client they were working on and every client they've ever had. Or what if they get sick or they get fired or they're on vacation? How are you going to fill in the gaps while somebody's away for 2 weeks if you don't have that information in CRM? I like Zoho. It's one of the better ones as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But not if you're not using it. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, right, I use one called PipeDrive. I really like it.
I use PipeDrive personally too.
But it gets the job done. So.
And Look, they all pretty much do the same thing. Some of them are way overpriced and just way too difficult to use. I like PipeDrive because it is simple and because of the visual effect of being able to see your pipeline and move things.
Yeah, I like that too.
I mean, I'm very big on pipeline management. It's just an easy one. We're a little more than halfway through. We're talking to Paul Butterfield, the CEO and founder of Revenue Flywheel Group. We'll be back in 60 seconds after a word from our sponsor, which is me.
Hi, I'm Jeff Goldberg, the founder of the Sales Pro Network. For nearly 5 decades, I've been selling, managing, coaching, and training salespeople internationally. And I'm often asked for one-on-one or private coaching, but it does involve a substantial investment. For that reason, I've recently developed the Sales Pro Insider Network community. It works like this. We get together twice a month on Tuesday nights from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern. At the first session of the month, it's you and me, with me taking your questions and giving you the advice and help you need to both prospect and sell more effectively. At the second session of the month, we'll have a guest coach speaking on a fascinating topic that helps sellers like you and me. And of course, we'll do group coaching then too. The best part is the investment is just $27 for the first month, and there's no long-term contract at all. In fact, you can cancel at any time. Go to crushsalesgoals.com. That's crushsalesgoals.com. I hope to see you there.
Love that.
Thank you.
I think a better way to spend a Tuesday night, invest in yourself.
I am very, very excited because this Tuesday night is the second session of this month. And we have a LinkedIn expert who's going to be talking about how to find more prospects and close more business using LinkedIn. And if you're listening to this right now, feel free to DM me or email me. I'm happy to give anybody a free pass to come see that and check it out with no risk whatsoever. I'm very excited about this. This is a brand new thing, by the way. I only started this in January because I'm probably like yourself. I've been approached many times by people over the years. Jeff, I want you to be my coach, but it's not cheap. I mean, I'm assuming that like me, you're very good at what you do and you know, you need to get paid for your time. And I've searched for a long time and really looked at how can I serve more people and still get paid for it without, especially because the people who need coaching most are typically the people who can't afford it because they're not doing
right. That's totally fair. Yeah.
So I'm happy to give anybody a free pass for this one. And even when I'm not giving a free pass, it's only $27 for the first month. It's a little bit more after that, but they can self-cancel at any time.
Less than a dollar a day.
Yep.
Yeah. But seriously, that is an investment anybody can make. And I will throw in a second on people showing up for this LinkedIn thing. started working with Sales Navigator and how did we back again, 2013, 2014, when Navigator first came out, and it's very different now than it was then. At Vonage, we brought it in across hundreds and hundreds of salespeople. Wow. Because it is not the only tool out there, but it is part of your toolkit. And when you use it effectively, it can be, I mean, I personally believe you'll never get away from picking up the phone. And I think we've maybe pivoted too far, right? Sometimes you just got to pick up the damn phone. But social selling is a real thing. You just know how to have to know how to do it. And it's not sitting on your stream for hours and hours every day, clicking on the thumbs up, you know. So I'm glad you're doing that. People need it.
Yeah, man. And look, I consider LinkedIn to be the salesperson's best friend. And I think Navigator is absolutely an essential tool. And again, I love hearing guys like you talk, because I constantly tell people, pick up the damn phone. I love texting. I love emailing. It's all very convenient. It's all very fast, except nothing replaces a face-to-face meeting. Nothing. Yeah. And video is second best after that. But the phone, it's a great way to stay in touch, and it's very personal. I still believe that it's the most cost-effective and time-efficient way to fill your calendar with appointments if you don't have enough. Now, here's one thing about me. I hate cold calling. I hate doing it myself. I built my business through cold calling, but I've gotten away from it as quickly as I possibly could by developing other tools like networking, where 30% of my business comes from, LinkedIn, where 30% of my business comes from, and getting referrals from existing clients. That's the rest of my business. Just because, here's why. I want every call to go like this, Paul. If you were a VP of sales and I was trying to sell you sales training and I called you out of the blue, I'd like the call to go like this. Hey, Paul, this is Jeff Goldberg from Jeff Goldberg and Associates. And you say, stop right there. I've heard about you. I know you're so damn good, you're going to get the appointment. And I know once you get out here, you're going to sell me. Why don't I save us both some time by sending you a check right now? Yeah. And you're laughing because that's not how those calls go. But I haven't had that yet.
Yeah.
If you know how to do it well and you do it consistently, it's still a great way to develop appointments and to stay in touch with prospects and customers. Anyways, I could rant on that one all day.
Yeah.
Among the other services that you provide, you help companies with onboarding and ramping people up. And I find that so many times organizations are completely blowing it when it comes to onboarding salespeople because they're winging it. Somebody comes in their first day and it's like, all right, here's what I want. You should go sit with that guy and watch what he's doing, or go sit with that lady and watch what she's doing. So it's a huge mistake as far as I'm concerned. You got to be prepared for when a new employee comes on. So what do you feel is important when onboarding a new sales rep?
Wow, there's a lot there. But a couple of things that I think are helpful. First, I don't use the terms onboarding and ramping interchangeably. So maybe help just to. So when I talk about onboarding, some people may consider that, you know, the sales boot camp or similar, but it's that immersive experience that I personally still feel needs to be in person wherever possible. Right. We're back to the point now where, you know, there really is not a travel restriction. It's maybe a budget thing, but I would suggest that you look at the potential return on that budget invest to bring people in. They're new in the role. They're in that honeymoon phase. They're excited. You want to capitalize on that. Bring them in. Let them see that they're working for an organization of some substance, not a tent in a field somewhere. But there are two things that happen in that week when it's done well. And you can do this on Zoom. We had to for about a year and a half, but I don't recommend it. First of all, that is the knowledge transfer. And that's what probably most people think of. But the reality is you're lucky if they remember 20 to 30% of what they learned that week. And you're going to have to build on that. We'll get to ramping in a second. But the second and equally valuable goal I have with an onboarding or bootcamp experience is starting to create a relationships with the people in the organization that are critical to your success. Even from the beginning, I could stand up, or somebody on my team could stand up and talk about how to work with Deal Desk. But why would we do that? Let's bring in the head of Deal Desk and let them talk to the sellers and take questions. Let's bring in someone from legal and talk about how to work with legal. You get where I'm coming from. Those are relationships that they need to have. And even though it's just maybe an hour and you know, but they still, now they know who that person is. And when they're back in the field and they may only not see them again until sales kickoff, those are valuable relationships. So that's maybe the week, you know, week or so. But now what do? Depending on what your role is in the revenue organization, you may ramp in 10 days, you may ramp in 3 months. But what are the predictable, and this is where, you know, again, a platform, I mentioned the sales enablement type platform is so critical. what are the blend of experiences? And I use that intentionally. Some of it's going to be asynchronous learning. Some of it's still going to be sit with this guy in a you know, a more sophisticated sense. Sure. Some of it's going to be time with your coach. Some of it's going to, or your leader. Some of it's going to be time practicing your demo and learning your demo. But it's a blend of experiences. And the other overarching thing that needs to be happening there is you are somewhat still in the nest, and enablement is still probably who you're interacting with the most at the beginning. But that needs to be handed off slowly and consistently to your sales leader. And if you have a sales engineer, they're also a great asset for a new salesperson. But at some point, you got to get on the bike. And as wobbly as you may feel, you're not going to get to be a great bike rider until you fall down and skin your knees. And so get out there. But we want to set them up for success. And that's that ramping. There's a lot of overlap between the different sales functions and or go-to-market functions, but everyone should also have its own individualized pathway that meets their needs. Not by individual, but by function.
No, I love that, Paul. And sometimes it's just the completely obvious things, like be prepared. I've been in many organizations where a new person comes on. They're bright-eyed, they're bushy-tailed, they're very excited because they made a decision, and we want to reinforce that they made the right decision. So when somebody comes in the first day and they hear, we ordered your computer, it'll be here in 10 days. Your business cards will be here in 30 days, for those of you who still use business cards. But it's like, be prepared. You know, have a little welcome thing on their desk if they are there in person. And I agree, it should absolutely be in person if at all possible. You know, make them feel welcome and part of the family, because it's weird when you walk into an existing organization the first day, you know, did I make a good decision? What are they going to think of me? You know, because we're all human. You know, as much confidence as we might have, we still have that, ooh, am I in the right place? So be prepared and make them feel welcome.
And here's a pro tip. Think about when you actually want to assign them accounts and give them, even if it's a ramping quota. Because in those first couple of weeks, my experience shows that whatever teeny bit of pipeline or quota they may generate isn't worth it, as opposed to leaving them alone and letting them focus on really getting ready to go out and have a true impact. And I've seen that really, give you a real world example. Sales rep was first day on the job, super excited. IT set him up, the computer, logs into his email. And what's the first thing he sees is a lengthy chain of hot and spicy emails from a client that he had been assigned, an account he'd been assigned, who was very upset. This new salesperson had no way to do anything about that, couldn't add any value to that conversation, and it just demoralized them. So be thoughtful even about things like that. Yeah, they need to get out there and sell. Yeah, they need to take that quota and they need to run with it. But the first day, probably not.
Yeah. I'm also a big fan of helping a new salesperson get a quick win. Help them to get that feeling that, oh, this is actually possible.
Yeah.
You know, because nothing is more depressing than I'm in for 6 months and nothing's happening yet. And look, sometimes you're in an organization where there is a long sales cycle, but help them get the quickest win possible so that they feel good. Great and then point. They will invest the time and effort to do what they need to do. Something else, because I research all my guests, I came across something that I found terrific. I'm a huge fan of the show Breaking Bad and the spinoff Better Call Saul. You do something called Better Call Paul. What's that about?
It's a couple of things. One, as I grew up in my career, I had the benefit of fantastic advice and people investing in my success who'd been there before me and had, you know, you learn a few things, right? You may get the rough edges knocked off of you, but you do come out more polished. You learn a few things. And so people that invested in me and helped me not make some of those mistakes. So number one, this is my way of just, I don't know, have all the answers, but you know, I've been doing this stuff for a quarter century, which makes you sound super old, but let me share some of that. And, you know, some of it's that. Some of it is also an opportunity for potential clients, and this will happen sometimes as well, to come and have a no pressure conversation and figure out, what am I even all about? Right? It's not a sales call. They control it. They chose to set it up. And we just talk about methodology, customer centricity, whatever they want to talk about. So it's really a combination of things, but it's time that I'm happy to invest, and I'll put it out there every so often, just back into the community for those reasons.
Love it. And look, that's what this whole group is about, the Sales Pro Network. I don't get paid to do this. I don't get paid to have the Facebook group, which has about 1,500 salespeople in it, but it is my way. It's my way of giving back. And if it makes you feel any better with your quarter century of experience, I've been selling for 48 years. So,
yeah. Well, that's tech. I don't want to get in ahead. Yeah. So I was selling stuff before I got into tech with HP, but and I'm also a big fan of the AMC show. So it's just kind of cool to have a name that ties in. And shout out to my graphics guy, Casey, recreating that graphic, because that is not one of my skill sets.
Caught my eye immediately. I see you're also involved with the Sales 3.0 Revenue Enablement Excellence Awards, which I think took place last month. What was that?
In June.
Oh, it's coming up. Oh, got it.
Yeah. Right now we're getting entries coming in. So
can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So about a year ago, my friend, and you may probably know Gerhard Schwander, Sales 3.0, Selling Power. Yeah. Who doesn't, right? Back at one point, I used to get bulk subscriptions of Selling Power sent to my salespeople because it was a solid magazine.
Of course.
Gerhard contacted me and expressed an interest in creating an award that recognized the impactful work being done in the enablement community. And I was excited that he did, because there are, I'll call them social media awards, that are given out in probably every industry. But to be honest, it's like, oh, how many followers do they have? Let's give them that award because we know they'll post. There's just too much of that on LinkedIn. It's one of my pet peeves. Don't get me started on that. And it's not an enablement thing. It's just out there. However, this was an opportunity. So when Gerhard asked me to help him create it, we laid down a couple of things that we thought were critical. Number one was we wanted to see real working case studies. We wanted to be able to show your work, right? So as an enablement leader, how did you identify the gaps in the revenue org and that were having the most or either least impact or the most negative impact, whatever it was? How did you identify that? And then what enablement solutions did you put in place? Might've been programs. It could have been tech, could have been whatever. That's what we want to see. And how did you measure the outcomes and the impact of those initiatives, and ultimately what was the revenue uplift that you saw? And it could be revenue uplift, it could be churn decrease. I mean, there's any number of ways that these programs could impact a company's bottom line, but that's what we want to see and celebrate. There's been too much. My background in enablement that I shared with you is somewhat unique. I'm not the only one that came up in that way, thinking about revenue. But there are still a lot of folks that are far too focused on what a friend of mine calls butts in seats and smiley sheets. How many people got certified? Yes, that is a useful leading indicator. But ultimately, what are you getting done? How is that impacting things? So it's I'll just pause there. But that is just something that I get very excited about. And it's just critical to figure out. Are we impacting that, and how are we measuring it?
I'm actually glad that I asked you about that, because I was introduced. I've known of Gerhard for a million years, because I, like you, huge fan of Selling Power magazine, and I used to do the same thing. Everybody got a subscription to it. But I was introduced to him personally a couple of months ago, and we were communicating back and forth about him being a guest on this show, and we kind of lost track. I don't know. But maybe it was him, maybe it was me. But
If you have enablement leaders that are listening, if it's okay, we are taking entries up until the 25th. So it's not too late, and those will be recognized on stage, the winners, in June at the conference, Sales 3.0 conference in Vegas.
And where would they go to enter?
Probably the easiest thing is to contact me through LinkedIn and let me get them the link. If they go to my stream, if they go to my LinkedIn page, they go to Gerhard's LinkedIn page. We've done numerous live streams on it, and there are links in those as well. But I'm happy to help anybody if they just want to reach out.
Perfect. And we're going to share your contact information in a few minutes before we end. A couple of months ago, you posted something that made me say, yes. And can you please speak about pitching? It's a word I just despise. I always tell audiences, take that word out of your vocabulary.
Yeah.
Stop pitching. Can you talk about pitching, please?
Yeah. Let me say this. I'll reiterate what I said at the beginning. And I'm going back to some of Neil Rackham's research, right? So he wrote Spin Selling, but if you look at some of the research he did on customers and how they interact, look at Jeff Moore's work, right? Numerous people have figured this out, that in that early conversation, Matt Dixon, right? This isn't new, but people are trying to figure out you. You are what they're focused on, not your tech, not your company, not that early. That will come. And so a pitch deck does not serve the function that I think people expect that it will. And if anything, it's probably a crutch. And you said something earlier about PowerPoint. I couldn't agree more. There's something you can feel the mood perceptibly shift in the room when you launch a PowerPoint slide, right?
It's like the eye roll of a teenager. Oh,
yeah, no. Something, right? So have conversations. In my experience, especially in enterprise sales, there will be a time that you're doing a formal presentation to a buying committee. You've got plenty of time to come up with that deck, but then you can customize that for them because you'll actually know something about them. But please don't show up and waste their time talking about you and your company and your awards. And again, one of my pet peeves is we just closed our Series X round of funding. Why do I care? Yet I see that in so many outreach emails I get and pitches I get. It's like, no, how are you going to help me? Focus
exactly.
On that.
Exactly. Just like I never want people to start out with, thank you so much for your time. The next word should not be, let me tell you why Jeff Goldberg and Associates is the greatest training and coaching firm in the world. Mm-hmm. And then you throw up all over them.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, that's your opinion, right? I don't know that.
Who cares about my
opinion? I don't believe that.
They don't care about my opinion. I care about my opinion, but they don't. Yeah. And, you know, we've got to stop making it about us. It's not at all about us. You know, Dale Carnegie, who wrote, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence mm-hmm. People, said, it's better to be interested than interesting. Mm-hmm. And I could not agree more. Go in and be interested in them. Find out about them. Yes. Do we have to establish a relationship with them? Absolutely. But you're not going to establish a relationship by saying, let me tell you how great I am.
And just my 2 cents on that. Yes, relationships are great, but a lot of salespeople worry about them too much. Buyers don't need more friends. They have friends. What buyers need is someone that can show them how to accomplish something that's causing problems in their business and that they haven't been able to figure out for themselves. If you make a friend in the process, great. But out of all the deals that I've closed in my sales career, I could probably count on 2 hands at most the number of times that prospects and I became friends. It's not that we were adversaries either, but people don't have to like you in the way that too many salespeople think of to buy from you. What they do need to see is that you're serious, you're authentic, and you can help them do something that they've got to get done.
Yeah, if they don't like you, it's going to be pretty much a problem.
Yeah, don't be a jerk.
Unless you've got what they want, they can't get it anywhere else.
Right.
But they do need to trust you.
They do. That's the authenticity. People's BS meters are probably more finely tuned now than they have ever been. Don't waste their time trying to do that.
Absolutely. We talked a little bit about, or at least I mentioned prospecting. What are you finding today to be some of the best practices in prospecting? We talked about cold calling. Mm-hmm. How can people get more appointments with decision makers? Because Paul, I don't know about you, but I find that virtually every single coaching client that comes to me, it's not that they're not closing enough. Well, they're not closing enough business, but it's not because they don't know how to ask a question. It's they're mm-hmm. not speaking to enough real prospects.
Not getting enough times at bat, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that has not changed in my experience in my recent memory. And we've talked about some of this already. When you're approaching a prospect, talk to them, whether it's email, whether it's phone outreach, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's LinkedIn, but what you want to understand, what you want them to be able to see about you is that you understand what people in their function are dealing with. That this isn't your first movie, your first rodeo, whatever you want to say. You've helped other clients. And by the way, if you are new in sales and you're like, yeah, but I haven't actually, here's a simple way to do it. We have found, we have seen, we often hear, because you know what? Your sales organization does. So you can still build that credibility. But if you're reaching out and talking to them about problems that this is where that business acumen becomes so critical that you and your organization know historically someone in that role is solving with some product or service you sell, odds are that that's going to be compelling to them. And it's definitely going to be far more compelling to than some of the garbage that I get. I mean, if there's good news in this, it's that the bar is still horribly low and reaching out and asking about problems, sharing success stories. Industry-specific success stories or success stories. And here's the biggest gap I see in success stories that most organizations, they don't talk about the results. yep, this was the problem. This is what they bought from us. This is what they were solving with it. And that's where it stops. Well, how? What were the measurable results that they saw? But using those things as a seller, that's how you differentiate. That's how you get people to want to talk to you. It's not, what do you say? It's not rocket science, but far too many. And please stop with the stupid emails. The worst I've ever seen, my friend Lisa Kelly and I, who runs RevOps for a number of companies, we used to create a wall of shame, the worst outreach emails we would send to each other. But my worst by far was the subject line, "My parents left me at the zoo." I won't go into what followed that, but that was the subject line. And please stop.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I might actually open that email just because I'm just curious.
Yeah, what would you buy? Would you buy from them?
Yeah, anyway? That I don't know. It depends on what the rest
of them But, did you get eaten by a crocodile? Did, you know, just stop.
Yeah, when I'm talking to salespeople, it's like as much as you possibly can, and it's impossible to do it completely, but get rid of the word I in your outreach. Stop talking about I. Nobody cares about I. And for me, when I'm talking about email marketing, I say the exact same thing. Start out with a problem that you know they have. Discuss their world. If you were a VP of sales and I was sending you an email, it would sound like this. "Hey, Paul, a lot of the VPs of sales I'm speaking to today say that they're finding that their sales cycle is longer and longer and longer." Now, why would I say that? Because that's exactly what they are telling me. I know
that
they have
that telling
problem.
You. Yeah.
And when you're a VP of sales and you read that, you go, "Oh, this guy gets me."
Yeah.
And that's somebody who may actually agree to an appointment with me. So, you know, again, it's that's, not rocket science.
Yeah, these sellers don't need an MBA. They're never going to equal the 30 years experience that senior director of IT may have, but they can be equipped to have the conversations about problems and outcomes that you just described. And that's on us to do that as leaders.
100%. We're almost out of time, but I want to bring this last thing up. You have some suggestions for when a salesperson starts their day with bad news, like maybe they're not a brand new salesperson, but they start their day with an email that's a complaint or a problem that a customer has. How do you suggest we salvage our day when it starts off poorly? And I'm with you. It can easily just suck out your whole day, and that's not what we want.
So first thing is, I will say, I'm a massive Jimmy Buffett fan. In fact, I even got the livid dream of being a guest DJ on Radio Margaritaville earlier this year. Wow. But as Jimmy would say, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, move on. And seriously, it's not you, it's business. The next thing is, if it's a customer problem, just acknowledge it and own it. Don't try to cover it up. Don't try to minimize it. That's not going to be helpful. Deal with it as quickly as you can, and then compartmentalize it. I know, easy to say, hard to do, but that is just reality. It's not you. Hopefully it's not you. I mean, if you did something to cause the problem, then yeah, you got to figure that out. But it's not personal, and you're going to have 10 crappy conversations for every wonderful conversation you have in sales. I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. If it was easier than that, everybody would want to sell. But that's where that confidence in yourself, confidence in your professionalism as a seller, confidence in the ability that you are the knowledge and the outcomes that you bring and help your clients solve, fall back on that and just get back in the game. Again, I know that's harder some days than others, but I just don't know another way around it. But that's the thing, Jeff, you talked about. But if you don't have that confidence built up, Stephen Covey talks about emotional bank account. And if your emotional bank account is already, you know, in the red, when you go into the day, then you're going to have a harder time. So invest in yourself and know that what you're doing is valuable and fall back on that.
Yeah. And I love what you said about compartmentalization. I went through an ugly divorce for a year. And every day I knew when I woke up, you know, the black clouds hanging over my head, it's going to be expensive, except I had to put on a smile every single day because my three kids were depending on me. And my customer doesn't care that I'm going through an ugly time with my soon-to-be ex-wife. They don't care about any of that crap. You got to go on and put on that smile. There's what's the name of that show? Will and Grace. I used to like Will and Grace. I liked Will. I didn't care much for Grace, but what I really liked was the two side characters, Karen and Jack. Jack the actor.
Yes.
Jack used to, you know, he was an actor, and he always used to go, "Just Jack." Well, that's who we have to be in sales sometimes. We got to put on that smiling face no matter what else is going on in our world, because your income depends on it. Your ability to serve your customers so that you can get that income depends on it. Paul,
I love what you said. Your bank doesn't care that the economy sucks. So
absolutely not. Yeah. Paul, I'm going to share my screen. Would you please let people know how to get in touch with you if they're interested?
Yeah. So those of you that are seeing this visually, just scan the QR code. It'll take you right out to my LinkedIn page. But I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find there. It's Paul R. Butterfield. And you'll find a way there. You can book time with me. You can send me a direct message. However you'd like to do it. If you see I've put up the Better Call Paul, which I do every so often, grab a slot with the link on that. But I'm easy to find. So
thank you, Paul. I appreciate your time. And thank you for sharing your brilliance so generously. And I'll end as I always do. Please remember, guys, sales is a game of making things happen. So get out there and make sales happen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great weekend, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.